Coming to you from the ancestral territory of the Anishinaabe and the area inhabited by the Haudenosaunee and the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, this is Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and the natural world around us, seeking solutions, reporting on news and events, presenting positive alternatives, and highlighting the steps others are taking. We hope to inspire you to join the many others who are working to preserve and protect a healthy planet. Ayanna Young, founder and executive director of For the Wild, welcome to Earth Matters. Telling us what For the Wild is and what was your motivation to get it started?
For the Wild is an organization. It's a collective of folks who work on a number of different projects. We have our podcast, which we may be most known for, and that's a weekly podcast where we speak about issues really at the intersection of climate, environmental, and social justice. And we talk with thought leaders and philosophers and religious leaders, indigenous leaders, intergenerational. It's really beautiful conversations that I've learned so much from over the past 6 years. And then we have our 1 Million Redwoods Project, which is a type of biomimetic, very unconventional reforestation project and native species nursery in Northern California that focuses on the temperate rainforest region and biodiversity. And then we do work up throughout Cascadia, which is the temperate rainforest region of North America, with land protection in terms of conservation projects, and then also working with other local organizations and folks on the ground to help with things like roadless rule in the Tongass National Forest to keep old growth logging from continuing in our national forest systems and so on and so forth. So it's a combination of education and land defense and media and relationship building. And oh, in terms of how it got started, or what led me to start this whole shebang, it really was a response to my own anxiety, fear, panic, depression, overwhelm of what I was learning about what was happening to our earth and the systems that created this, just this time that we're living in with climate change and the Anthropocene extinction. And I was really needing to look to elders and other folks who had been in the work for a long time to hear their perspective and get their guidance. And then also I knew that I needed to be tangible in my response and give my, not just my mind and my heart, but also my body, and be really physical with the earth in terms of being involved with restoration and conservation of these last remaining wild places.
Quite a lot. You started out as a filmmaker. Tell us a little bit about your filmmaking background and what have you produced?
Well, I actually started off as an actress when I was younger. I was the Pampers baby when I was 9 months old, and my career just started to grow from that point. So, yeah, as a baby, I did commercials and modeling, and then when I was about 5 years old, I started doing more theatrical work in movies and television, and I did that for about 18 years until I went to college and I just wanted out of the entertainment industry. I was so exhausted from the just strangeness that is the entertainment industry. And I felt like I really needed to expand myself. And so in college, I started studying philosophy and art history and theology, but I ended up coming back to creating a short film, which I didn't really ever imagine that I would ever work in media again. And I definitely didn't imagine that I would make a film. So it was pretty shocking to me that I did it. But Like I was mentioning in my previous response, in Alaska, in the Tongass National Forest, they are, well, they, meaning the U.S. Forest Service, is selling off leases to private companies to log our last remaining old growth on our public lands with our taxpayer dollars. And there's only 2 to 4% of all old growth left globally. So when I heard that we were literally paying to log our last remaining old growth, and I'm a complete lover and just absolutely in reverence to these old growth forests, I wanted to do something. And so I ended up making a short film called When Old Growth Ends. And it's really an ode. It's a poem. It's kind of a love offering to the forest that's really talking about logging in a way. And it's talking about the relationship to salmon, but it's also really talking about the existential crisis that led us to logging our last remaining old growth trees and taking the last wild fish. And I really wanted people to walk away with more questions than answers. And hopefully that was able to be accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you did in that film. And it's still available via your website, which is forthewild.world. It seems to be that you are a seeker of, as you say, eco-justice, but just in general, your curiosity leads you to important issues. You're also a communicator. You are a speaker. You've spoken at Bioneers, Spirit Weavers Gathering. You've taken classes there or given classes there. And let's turn to that podcast that you were talking about. I agree, as a podcaster, I get a lot more out of interviewing different people and finding out what makes them tick and what goes on behind the scenes. It's a wonderful way to learn and be rewarded. So tell me a bit more about the podcast. What prompted you to start a podcast as opposed to just writing or a blog or any number of things?
Yeah, well, I think because of my background as an actress, I really was, I guess, trained to be able to speak and communicate through my voice. So I think it just, in a sense, was more natural for me to have a podcast than, say, a blog or writing books in that regard. But also, I think what prompted me in a more meta view way is that I really love not having to be on a screen. I really love how podcasts allow people to listen and educate themselves and seek out their curiosities while gardening, while cooking, while cleaning, while commuting to work. I love the freedom that podcasts offer in that way. And so I think there was those elements that drew me to podcasting, just feeling that it was kind of a natural transition to me. And not even that I really thought that when I started the podcast. I think it just kind of flowed into one. No, it just flowed into each other. And I didn't even plan on actually really creating a podcast. I was driving across the country from the West Coast to the East Coast after Fukushima blew up in, gosh, what was that, 2012 or 2013 maybe? And I was listening at the time to radio shows that were also podcasts. And I was listening to a lot of apocalyptic stuff. I was listening to a lot of information on health and healing, a lot of system disruption podcasts. So they're all pretty intense. And after one of the podcasts I was listening to, I just decided to pick up my phone and call this station based out of New York City. And I was driving across Arizona at the time. And my partner was like, "Who are you calling?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm calling the radio network." And he's like, "Well, what are you doing? You know, it's ring, ring, ring." And I'm like, I think we should have a podcast. He's like, "Well, what are you talking about? Like, what's the podcast going to be about?" I'm like, "I don't know." And then click, like the phone gets picked up and it happens to be the station manager. And I just kind of rolled with it. I'm usually pretty good on my feet, although this morning I'm feeling a little slower than usual. And he decided to give us a chance. And from that point forward, it was a catalyst to allow us to get our our I don't know if I can cuss, but it was yeah, this catalyst that kind of pushed me to get my stuff together. And so instead of it just being a lofty dream that was out there and maybe it would happen one day, now there was this potential opportunity that really drove me to learning about what microphone I should use and what software to be utilized as well. And, you know, I was so green. Even I had just never done a podcast. I really knew nothing about editing, marketing, production in that way. And so every podcast, I feel like I'm still learning, although at this point we're much more streamlined in our production. At the beginning, it was just us trying to create these podcasts whenever we could and probably taking a lot longer than need be, but it was an incredible learning experience and I'm grateful for those early times. And yeah, we're still growing grassroots and it feels really good to be
And
doing it.
you're up to episode 162, so it must be going well. You mentioned a bit of a team. Who else are you working with on the podcasts?
Yeah, I have an amazing team of folks all over the country. There's Andrew Storrs, Francesca Glassfell, Hannah Wilton, Aaron Wise, Erica Ekram, March Young, Melanie Younger. That's just to name the people that I get to work with every week. Aidan McRae. And everybody is just so deeply caring and so dedicated to quality. And I really love being able to work with these folks. And I never imagined that I would have the honor of working with a team that is so dedicated to the work. Because when I started talking about climate change and the Anthropocene and system disruption and anti-civilization issues, what was this, you know, 10 years ago, most people didn't want to hear about it. You know, I'd talk to my family and they'd think, oh, you're just overreacting, or this is not really that big of a deal, or, you know, you're a bummer. You are, you know, you're the not the life of the party. And even my friends, you know, sometimes they would listen, but I just didn't have a community that really wanted to hear my thoughts and my fears and my overwhelm of what was happening, or even discuss what could we do to get through this time. And so, you know, now to think that I'm able to spend the majority of my days, every day of the week, working with people who are so willing to sit in the fire together and look at these hard truths straight on and then create beautiful content to express what's happening in this time is just a total dream come true. So yeah, it's a great group of folks and we work week in, week out on the podcast on all of the elements from choosing the guest, pre-production, production, post-production, outreach, graphics, you name it, we're on it. And I love it. I'm so, yeah, I love talking about all these people because it brings a huge smile to my face.
Well, let me ask you a question that I get asked all the time. How do you choose your next guest?
Well, so we use a software program called Slack. And on Slack, we have multiple channels, one of those channels being potential guests. And so the team will, you know, whether it's through their own reading or interest or whatever they're following online, they'll find people that are, you know, strike their interests or their curiosities, and they will post them up in the channel. Maybe they'll post an article or they'll post the name of the person and their biography. And as a team, we look through these people and we try to be really diverse in the topics we cover and who's speaking to those topics. And sometimes that makes it harder to find people because the, you know, usually who speaks about top, it, well, that's a whole other wormhole that I won't get into at the moment.
You do your research. That's great. Just looking at your website, Solidarity with the Unotsin, Kurt Russell, Jesse Wolf Hardin, talking about gold, gold mining, bees, the world of plastic. all kinds of different topics. So it's quite an adventure to go through your podcasts.
The main theme,
the first thing that you see on your webpage is I don't know if it's a motto, but it's an anthology of the Anthropocene. So can you tell us a little bit more about where that came from?
Well, the podcast, it to me is an anthology of the Anthropocene. And what I mean by that is the topics we cover and the people that we interview are speaking to this time that we're living in, which is the Anthropocene, is the sixth mass extinction. And so we felt like it's almost like this library of knowledge and perspectives on this very specific moment in our history. And as the podcast grows, the anthology grows, and for people who want to tap in to the issues of our time and get really deep and knowledgeable about what's happening, they can come and look through our anthology. So I don't know if that fully answers the question, but it was just something that kind of came up as a creative spark, and it really felt like it fit.
A number of your topics relate to personal well-being and making sure that, as you say, sometimes people get eco-anxious, if I can call it that, but they need to reconnect with nature. You've got, you know, the typical three R's: reduce, reuse, recycle, and then you add four more: reconnect, renew, resist, and revere. So how important is that to you to convey the importance of taking care of yourself and working with nature?
So in terms of reconnecting with nature and the self-care element and taking care of ourselves, the importance of that, well, it's hugely important. Although I wish that self-care, in a sense, didn't have to happen. I wish we could just be little workaholic bees fighting for the earth at all times and not necessarily have to think about our health. You know, of course, that's not the case. Our bodies are in need of our attention, and especially in times where there's so much toxicity in terms of actual toxicity from environmental issues, but also I think mental and spiritual toxicity coming at us from all angles. It is really important that we take the time to focus on our well-being, and I mean psychological, spiritual, emotional, physical, our community well-being. All of these things are necessary for us to be sustained as Earth Defenders for the long run. And so it's taken me a number of years to learn how to take care of myself, and I'm still learning. And some things that have been really powerful for me lately is resting a lot of, as much sleep as I can get, as much quiet time as I can muster throughout the days, and not feeling so anxious and urgent that I have to grind and push so hard every day, because I think that sense of urgency is really disruptive, although I also understand it. And in a lot of ways, I have been led by the urgency of our time. But I think there's a way that we can balance how to reply to the urgency by being engaged and focused and committed every day, but also realizing that that commitment needs us to be able to be healthy, to fulfill those commitments that we make to the earth. And so, yeah, spending time with loved ones and being able to be quiet near a tree every day, those things may seem like they're not as important as other work, but I think that it's necessary in order for us to be in our integrity, in our power, and in our devotion.
You mentioned on your website, we are the cusp of a great movement toward reintegration in nature on a personal level, on a community level, and on a global level. Do you really think we're close to a tipping point? Do you think the message is getting through?
Well, I think it's getting through a lot more than it ever has before. I could say that, Gosh, when I started the podcast, it was so rare for anybody to be speaking about these issues. Even climate change was barely touched on in the New York Times, for instance. And now I see articles every day about what's happening to the earth. And there's much more speak about renewable energy and things of that nature. So I do think, in a sense, it's getting through to people. I don't think that people know what to do about it. I think partially people don't want to give up their creature comforts, their luxury modernity items. They don't want to give that up, and they don't know how to shift their lifestyles. So I think people are awakening and people are opening up to more and more information, but I don't think that that's actually leading to the correct actions to deal with the massive predicament that we're in.
Can we at least say you're positive?
I mean, I think it's positive that more and more people are speaking about it. I think the fact that people are in conversation and discussing it is a great step. I mean, that has to happen in order for us to learn what actions to take.
You asked the question, what will it take for our culture to respect the intrinsic sovereignty of the land? So have you found the answer to that yet?
No, I may never find that answer. I don't really believe in finding answers. I am more interested in the questions, and I feel that way also about solutions. I don't really also believe in solutions. I believe in relationships, and it's a very different way of being engaged with the issues. And no, I don't think that, well, yeah, I think we're very far as a culture from being able to respect the land and the sovereignty of the land. We can see that on a daily basis. People, especially in the United States, have been conditioned to be extremely entitled to taking from the land whatever they want, and not just the land around them, but the land of the globe, really, and just kind of thinking in externalities, like not really seeing what our entitlement is doing to land elsewhere or even around us. So I think we have a long way to go to get there. I think there are leaders who are opening up those paths for many of us. And if we are willing to open our eyes and open our hearts, and if we're willing to really see the hard truths of our time, I think we'll have a much better chance at protecting what we can in this time frame. But yeah, we're definitely, in my opinion, pretty far from being in right relationship to the land.
What's next for Ayanna Young?
Well, I am so devoted and committed to the projects of For the Wild and to the land, especially that of the temperate rainforest, that I am definitely going to continue fighting and loving and being awake and aware and really present in this time and finding joy and also allowing myself to feel the grief of this time. And so I kind of imagine that I'm going to continue just doing what I'm doing, but getting more clear and more focused as I go. And yeah, just kind of riding the wave of our time right now. So yeah, there's so much ahead of us. And I'm probably, one of the things I'm most excited about is working to protect other wild places like the Copper River Delta in Alaska. That's a project I'll be working on this summer. And I'm so excited to be back on that river with Dune Lankard, who is the founder of the EAC Preservation Council, and will be in deep, loving strategy of how to protect this place from coal mining developments. And I could not be more excited and grateful for that work.
Well, I wish you continued success. If people want to reach out and connect with For the Wild, how can they do that?
Well, you can find us on our website at forthewild.world. You can find us on social media, Instagram for the wild, Facebook for the wild, Twitter for the wild. You could find us on iTunes and Spotify. You can email us at connect@forthewild.world. And yeah, there's many ways to get a hold of us, and we're looking forward to connecting with anybody who is interested.
Sounds great. I've been speaking with Ayanna Young, founder and executive director and podcast host of For the Wild. Thank you for joining us on Earth Matters.
Thanks, Lawson.
Lawson Hunter here, host and producer of Earth Matters. I wanted to thank all the listeners of Earth Matters for your continuing support. As always, please feel free to send us your comments, suggestions, and thoughts on topics and people we should look at for future programs. I'd also like to encourage you to like, rate, and share Earth Matters with others so that our work can reach a larger audience. Thanks for listening.